The views and opinions expressed on this program aren't necessarily those of this station, but those of the sponsors, Armada Advisors.
Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. It's the Pensacola Expert Panel. My guest this morning, Wesley Odom from Armada Advisors. Go to armadaadvisors.com. They are helping their clients navigate a financial future that, you know, is very, very hard to come by these days. Everybody's very, very scared about inflation and all the things happening in our economy. But Wesley is here to shed some light on some things. So thank you for being here this morning. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's great to be here. Beautiful day.
Oh, gorgeous day. Yes, yes. Loving this weather. I think we're going to get up to the 80s pretty soon.
Wow.
Coming up. So, I'm loving it. If you have questions this morning, let us know. Anything about your financial future, investments, 401k, IRAs, Roth, traditional, all of that stuff, let us know. 437-1620. All right. So we always just kind of get right into topics, but let's kind of start at the beginning for somebody who may be just joining us and maybe a new listener. What are the first steps that an investor should take when they're trying to secure their financial future, especially with Armada Advisors?
They need to get a handle on what their inflow is and what their outflow is. I mean, it's really basic. I mean, some people say, you know, I'll never become a millionaire or whatever. And says, really? You could. You got to live within your means. That's the first thing. Yep. If you live within your means, and that's very simple. I mean, it's like, okay, you make X, you spend Y. If X is always more than Y and you've got discretionary cash that you could do something with, then you're good to go. But the problem that I see sometimes is when the why, which is your expenditures, get a little too high than they should, and you live a little bit large, and your X is not meeting up with Y, and you get in problems, you know, and you get somebody who's, you know, maybe has too many credit cards, too much interest they're paying to somebody else, and it's a bad cycle to get into. And it's easy to want. Our society is always can be built on wants, but live within your means. I think that's the first thing.
Yeah. I love how you always say, well, what's the best way to get, you know, a good rate of return on my money? And you say, well, pay off the credit card, you know, get that interest back that you're paying. Cause some people are paying upwards of 20% interest on that. So that's, yeah, definitely look at your inflow and outflow. How much should a person be saving for retirement each month? And I know that with IRAs and things like that, there's limits to how much you can put in per year, right?
There are. I think that the easiest thing to do, rather than say that, you know, you need to say X number of dollars, is to do it by percentage. Because, you know, everyone makes different amounts of money, you know. And I've seen folks who I would say have not been huge salaries, but they've lived within their means. You know, they had really smart. They maybe inherited a house that from their mother and father and didn't have a mortgage payment or a very low, or they lived in a house a long, long time and they paid it off and they're getting a lot, building up a lot of cash, and they've had a disciplined approach of putting a certain percentage in their savings account. I mean, just like it says in the Bible, encourages people to tithe, right? How often do we tithe to ourselves?
True.
I mean, you know, and that's a rule. If you and your employer together are putting in around 10%, that's the rule of thumb. Generally speaking, you should have enough money. If you start in your 20s, you should have more than enough money to retire at 65. But you know, if you never did start in your 20s and you're like, okay, I didn't put anything money. I've been living payday to payday. Mm-hmm. You know, we've heard that expression.
Right.
And then you start when you know, some people, you know, start in their late 40s or 50s, and that's why the IRS allows a makeup provision that allows you to put more money into your IRA, because there's a lot of people out there in that situation.
I'm one of them.
And so anyway, you have to make up for lost time, and that's the thing is, you really, if you start out early enough, only putting 10% in, either you and the employer. So let's say the employer puts in 3%. because a lot of employers will put in 3% or 4% of your pay, and you put in 6, that means you'll be able to retire on time every time. And that's the key. And you know, if you could sit down with a financial guy, you could run the math and figure out, okay, if I just did this, would I have enough money? And then you get into Social Security and figure out, okay, well, how much might that contribute to my retirement? And that's another question too. So there's a lot of things to think about it, but I think realistically that the answer that you're asking for or question you're asking is that magic number is 10%. Mm.
And when we're investing in our retirement portfolios, do we get to choose what we invest in? Should we go toward stocks, bonds, a mix of both? How should we, you know, diversify that?
Well, it obviously depends on your age and your what you're trying to accomplish. You know, if you're trying to save money for the next 12 months for the purchase of a new car, let's say, or a down payment of that, or a house, or a big ticket item, you know, I wouldn't put that money in the market per se. I think that would put it in the money market account or maybe a short-term CD that would earn above average interest. I mean, money market now accounts are getting around 5%. So, I mean, that's a good rate of return. So that would be one idea to keep it really safe. If you have a longer-term time horizon, you know, I'm saying like, okay, I'm going to do something in 5 years, you could probably put some money away to have it grow. And things that will grow, I think, over a period of time would be equities, which would be stocks. Mm-hmm. And you might say, well, I don't know enough to buy one particular stock. Okay, I can understand that. Well, what about a mutual fund? And there are different types of mutual funds that do different things. Mm-hmm. And there are different stocks that do different things, too. I mean, you might have a comfort level about one company and not another, you know. Mm-hmm. But then again, I've seen some people, you know, will bank everything on one company. And they end up getting stuck because they fall in love with the company over time. And it's an emotional thing. Mm. And they don't want to ever sell it. And I think they sometimes miss out on what they could have gotten. So, you know, I think you have to be sensitive of that. Investing is not like falling in love. It's like it's like dollars and cents. What's working now? Where's the economy? I mean, if you look at the top 10 holdings of different mutual funds, for example, and I've been doing this since 1992, so we're on over 30 years into this. You know, the top 10 holdings in the mutual funds over time have changed dramatically. Just absolutely A to Z. And the reason they've changed is not because someone's telling the portfolio managers to change them. It's because the economy is always changing. You have companies that are moving in and out of favor. Some companies get more expensive. Other companies have something new and exciting to like we talked earlier about NVIDIA a while back. You know, right. How that's an AI company. And last year, I remember at the beginning of the year, I know I was telling people that was going to be my number one pick. And that certainly did really well. It was up 200%. I think the year to date now it's up like ungodly this year.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, but that's something that 10 years ago you wouldn't have found it.
Mm. What, you mentioned CDs earlier, cash deposits, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
What is the longest length you would go on a cash deposit?
It depends on what the rates are. Mm. I mean, you know, if all of a sudden the interest rates went up to, let's say, 10%, you could buy a 10% CD, I'd say, can I get in line?
Right.
I mean, I would. I mean, yeah. I would be like crazy. But I remember back in the 80s, and some people out there will probably remember this too, mm-hmm. that when the money market rates were at 15% and the CDs were at 10, people were saying, well, why would I want to get a 5-year CD at 10% when I can leave my money in the money market and get it whenever I want to at 15%? And people were saying that, mm-hmm. and the smart thing would have been was like, well, wait a minute, they can that money market can change as quickly as you know you could snap your finger, so to speak.
Exactly.
And it did. It kept on going down, 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 and you know we all know that what happened. I mean, basically from the 1980s, you know, the interest rates went down, 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 down to zero for a long period of time, mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden they started to creep up, and now they're where they are right now. So. I mean, I know that I'm really kind of messing up some ups and down valleys in there, but bottom line is we have been and were in for many years at a very low interest rate environment, which allowed for our economy and to really propel people to go buy great mortgage rates and super, I mean, a 3% mortgage for 30 years, a 4%, a 2.5%, I've heard. I mean, these are great. And I don't know if we're going to see those for a long time to come. So we'll see.
All right. So mutual funds, for those who are kind of new to investing, a mutual fund is what exactly? What is that group doing for you?
Well, there are different types of mutual fund. A mutual fund, the easiest way to explain it is like a pie. Okay, when you eat a pie, you cut a piece of, let's say, that cherry pie, mm-hmm. and you have, when you taste a piece of the cherries, you get cherries and sugar, and you get dough, mm-hmm. and you get food coloring, and you get all that stuff, but it's all one. And so, and what it is in a mutual fund, you own a slice of whatever the portfolio manager has done in your, you know, for your benefit. You own, let's say, some NVIDIA stock. You own, let me say, Coca-Cola stock, or you own Procter & Gamble stock, or whatever the case may be. Whatever that guy's owning, just like the ingredients of that pie, you own a sliver of it, and that's you. And you can do the same thing with your own portfolio. You could say, you know, if you have a large enough portfolio, you could build your own pie. You can say, well, I want to buy some Home Depot stock, and I want to buy some Lowe's stock, or whatever the case may be. You could do that and build your own little portfolio, and over time you could benefit from that. So there's different ways to do it. It's just, how big an investment we're talking about in a portfolio. A nice thing about a mutual fund is that you can do it on a small scale. So you don't have to have, you know, $100,000 to buy your own portfolio. You could do it with, let's say, a smaller amount. And you also can do different things like that. Let's say your financial guy is not real qualified to do. For example, I'm not qualified to really do an emerging markets portfolio. I don't have the skill set for that. I couldn't build a individual portfolio for that. That would be beyond my, because I'm not trained in that. There's a lot of stuff about moving, but a mutual fund would be good. A guy who specializes in that'd be perfect for him.
Right.
So you might think about, okay, well, do I need emerging markets portfolio? Do I need a small cap growth? I mean, I think it depends on what you're going for. And an advisor could sit down with you and say, what's your objective? What are you trying to accomplish? And does it make sense to buy emerging markets? I mean, personally, I'm not real big on those guys right now.
Right.
But anyway, that's just me.
So you would be considered, Armada would be considered a traditional financial advisor, correct?
Well, I wouldn't say a traditional. I think we're non-traditional because a traditional financial advisor is one that is called a registered representative, and they're the mm-hmm. ones who accept collect commissions mm-hmm. and fees from mutual funds. In our environment, we're non-traditional in the sense that we're a fee-for-service. So in other words, we don't charge a commission when you buy or trade. We have a negotiated rate, and the negotiated rate is X. So mm-hmm. it might be 0.35% or something like that, or whatever the case may be. It's like if you make money, we make money. That kind
right.
of situation.
Right. Yeah. If you do well, they do well.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. So there's no incentive for us to trade the account. Like, okay, we can roll this money again. Mm-hmm. We can get more commissions.
Right.
That's a traditional financial advisor.
Gotcha.
So we're like more of a, I guess you call it a no load in the sense that we don't charge a fee in, we don't charge a fee out. We do collect an annual fee over time. And that's what a no load mutual fund does as well.
Well, the reason why I bring that up is there's this new class of advisors, robo advisors. We've talked about this a lot on the show. Should a person consider using robo advisors?
I think that robo has a place in the scheme, especially if it's it has a place. I personally wouldn't want to do it with my money just because I have some different objectives with it. I might, you know, if I, I guess you could call a, I just wouldn't want to do it. I don't think that a person who is a large investor is going to want to do that personally. I think they're going to want a little bit more hands-on involved on it, or they might say, okay, I'm willing to take a portion of it and put it on robo world, if you want to call it that, maybe 10% or something like that. I could see that happening. Mm.
Now, is that the same as like these, you know, the apps and everything that people have on their phones? Is that a different category? What is that all about? Because I hear about that in the news all the time.
Yeah, those apps that you have are those people like Robinhood, for example,
right.
who are going to basically build their own little portfolio and buy their stocks and sell them accordingly, and they're going to pay a small commission, so to speak, and the commission really is going to be an execution commission because you really don't know what the execution is going to be. But anyway, that's different. A robo is a situation where you put it in, let's say you're $10,000, and a computer literally trades it for you on some different mutual funds based upon the criteria.
Okay.
And that's what it does. And they have I think that, you know, in our investing, how we use, I guess, computers, if you want to call it AI, whatever, but we program what we're looking for in different security. So, for example, we will use some screens to say, okay, I'm looking for a certain company that does this or whatever. And it's generally has to do with money. Are you making money? I mean, that's the bottom line.
Right. All right. You're listening to the Pensacola Expert Panel here on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. My guest this morning, Wesley Odom, the president of Armada Advisors. Check them out at their new location, 1800 North E Street, across from the Old Baptist Hospital. Give them a call, 497-6167, or check them out online, armadaadvisors.com. Now, you mentioned, you know, a person being sort of hands-on and with their portfolio and changing things up every once in a while. How often should a person take a look and rebalance their portfolio?
I think they need to do it whenever there's a substantial change in the, like, it's like economic conditions, or when things get like, it seems there's changes that seem to, occur. Like, for example, you know, you've got to be aware of if certain targets are met. You might say, when you do an evaluation on an individual security, you might say, okay, at what price do I really think this is going to be overvalued based upon the current earnings projections I'm looking at? And if you do the math and you, and all of a sudden the stock reaches that target, you got to ask yourself, okay, what's changed? And the same thing can happen if the stock goes down a certain amount. You got to say, okay, well, why did it go down and what's changed? And sometimes, you know, if it goes down more than 30% from what you bought it, you got to ask yourself, okay, is it the thesis still the same? And unfortunately, even for financial people, sometimes they can get caught in a vortex. You know, they kind of believe their own pudding, you know, stuff, so to speak.
Right.
And but more than often not, that it takes great discipline. I know several years ago, you know, we Apple had reached our target and we sold it. And I heard about a few weeks later that Warren Buffett had done the same thing, you know, because it reached his target. And I thought, oh, man, I really felt good about it. Then I read somewhere in a periodical that a big money manager I knew had sold his Apple. And I'm like, oh, man, Wes Odom has really got it right. My valuations were coming up the same way. And I said, but I, at some point, I want to get back into the stock because I really believe in it. Well, I have to wait 30 days. There's a 30-day wash rule, which means that you have to wait 30 days where you buy the stock. And that way the gain you took doesn't go against you, you know. So I was waiting for that 30 days, and you know what happened? It went down so low in that 30-day period, it started to go back up again. It's like, oh, man, I missed the opportunity. So anyway, you know, but sometimes that happens. You know, stocks will go down really quickly, and you're like, oh, man, I want to get back in. But, you know, you were right about the whatever. And sometimes, like I know a few years ago, we were right about Netflix. It looked like really big opportunity to get out of it. We made, like, a huge amount of money for people, got out of it. It was perfect timing. And then we waited, and we eventually didn't get back in because we found other things that were really, really good now. But I think now Netflix is a different paradigm than they were before. They used a lot of resources to get them house in order. So, again, it's about looking at securities and when things change. That's what you got to look at when things change. And also got to look at, you know, who's managing the money. You know, if your portfolio manager changes, you got to ask yourself, okay, is it why they change this guy? You know,
right.
And I know one time there was this guy whose name is George Vanderhyde, and he managed the Fidelity Growth Opportunities Fund. Fantastic manager. And they brought him in, and this was like in early 2000. And they said, you know, you haven't bought into this tech stuff, and you're on all these tech funds have been going great, 1999, 98. And we think you missed the boat. We think you're like high or something. And he says, no, I haven't missed the boat. I don't believe in this stuff. I think it's way overpriced. I think I don't want to do that. He says, no, we want you to change the portfolio. And he says, I'm not going to do it. He says, and this guy's seasoned. I mean, he's a really good guy.
Wow.
He walked away. They hired another girl named Jennifer Erwig, and I believe that was her name. And she was hired, and on March the 4th of 2000, she was buying into that portfolio, switching it around, buying the tech stuff. And you know what happened on that day? The stock market on that day started to go down. And it went down for 3 years in a row, 20% a year, 3 years in a row. And you know, had the worst performing, he had one of the best performing funds, and he went down to one of the worst performing because they changed the portfolio manager. So who's managing the money? Got to be real apparent of it. Who's managing it? And yeah, they want your best interest, but there's a lot of politics sometimes involved about right. who's doing it, what, you know, whatever. And you got to be comfortable with that.
Yeah, definitely a lot of trends and things that people get fixated on in the market. If you have questions about your retirement portfolio, saving strategies, your personal finances, give us a call or a text this morning, 437-1620. You're listening to the Pensacola Expert Panel here on News Radio 92.3. You mentioned earlier in the show about some of the first steps people should take when they're securing their financial future. Let's talk about debt versus retirement. I hear on other shows all the time people saying, well, you know, if you have debt, then you shouldn't worry about retirement. But somebody who's a little bit older that has a little bit of consumer debt outside of their home, should they prioritize saving for retirement, or should they pay off those credit cards first?
Well, you know, I really hate credit cards.
Oh, no, payments. I do too.
I mean, you know, I mean, think about it. I mean, they're very easy because they're convenient. They're easy. You know, it's easy to spend money on your credit card when you see that, you don't see that cash kind of flow out of your wallet.
Yeah, there's no initial sting.
Right, exactly. You're like, wait a minute, like that, the cash I had in my wallet is not as much as it was. You know, you don't feel that way when you use a credit card. That's right. Why they love it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that's the way it's going. I mean, you know, there's a friend of mine who's went to China recently and used to go to China and they used to use cash and whatnot. And no, you can't do that. They won't even, wouldn't even take U.S. dollars. They're just taking, they have to use a little credit card for everything.
Right.
So I think, will that be America in the future? I don't know. I know we're using more credit cards than we did 30 years ago. That's for certain.
Definitely.
You look at Visa stock, you look at MasterCard stock, it's higher. Why? Because their earnings are greater. Mm-hmm. So what should people do? I think the first thing they should do is work toward, and part of their retirement goal is to strategize about paying off that house. You know, they can say, okay, when we're retired, we want to have the house paid off. Because you got to remember, when you're retired, you're not bringing as much money.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to say, okay, what do we have? It's going to bring us money. You're going to have your Social Security. And hopefully you're going to have earnings from the retirement income that you've been able to stow away. And you got to come up with a strategy to take money out of those assets you've accumulated. Mm. And that's really crucial. How are you going to take those money assets out? And also, how are we going to control any other debt we have? So if you can eliminate the debt, eliminate those extra 20% payments,
right,
you are good to go.
Yeah. And that kind of leads me into thinking about life insurance and long-term care insurance through retirement. So we'll talk about that after the Fox News break. Getting back to debt real quick before we take our break here, what are some ways that you know of that you've used maybe and you can advise for people to pay off their debt faster? What strategies are there to do that?
Well, I mean, I think the biggest thing is, number one, figure out, okay, what's the highest debt? You know, that's always ask somebody, do you have any debt? Yes. Okay. What's the most expensive? Like, in other words, are you paying 20% on this credit card?
Mm-hmm.
And the car loan's only at 3%? Okay. Well, why are you paying the car loan off first? I don't know. It just seems like the right thing to do. No, the right thing to do is pay off that credit card at 20%.
So you're saying pay off the higher interest loans first before anything, no matter the amount.
I think that's key. Yes.
Hmm. Okay. Interesting. All right. What about financial emergencies? Everybody talks about the $1,000 savings for the emergency fund and things like that. How can you protect yourself from those financial emergencies that might just totally throw you off track when you're in this process of paying off debt?
Great question. You know, really it's, I use the rule of thumb of, if you're single, need to have 3 months expenses in your savings account or checking, whatever you want to call it. And if you're married, you need to have 6 months of expenses in the normal expenses. Now, you know, and granted, you know, you could always have worse things pop up.
Right.
But, I mean, at least if you've got that money in the savings accounts and the checking, that's good. You can also have an additional money set aside for your retirement. You know, you might have a Roth IRA in addition to these 6 months if you're married. You might have a regular brokerage account, let's say, you know, that you've got saved up for those rainy days. So in other words, when you have a problem that arise, like the car gets totaled or whatever,
mm-hmm.
You know, you can go to the savings initially, and then you can go into your brokerage account, let's say.
Mm.
But it's you got to figure out, you got to begin somewhere. I think the thing is expenses. What are you having expenses every month? And we all know it is. Just get out the bills.
Right.
Assess the bills.
Yeah. We all should have a budget, right? I mean, we should have that monthly budget, food and all of our expenses, even things that we don't even think about. Like, when I look at my food budget, I always double what I initially think my food budget's going to be, because eating out at restaurants and just, you know, we always underestimate, I think, our food budget every month. That's a big budget buster, so.
And you're at the Pink Pony, too. I saw you there.
No, I wasn't. That was the other Jake Walker. All right, we'll be right back after Fox News.
Fox News, I'm Chris Foster. Former special counsel Robert Hur is testifying at a House Judiciary Committee hearing today about his report on President Biden's mishandling of classified documents. Republicans are critical of Hur not recommending criminal charges, Democrats of his using the report to criticize the president's memory.
I did not sanitize my explanation, nor did I disparage the president unfairly.
Transcripts are released today of his interviews with President Biden. There's a new report on inflation from the Labor Department.
The consumer price index rose 0.4% in February, as expected. Core inflation, excluding food and energy, also rose 0.4%. On an annual basis, the consumer price index rose 3.2%, stronger than forecast and up from January.
Fox's Jenny Casola. A big part of last month's inflation is driven by gasoline and rent. On Wall Street, stocks are higher today. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 10:31 at News Radio 92.3. I'm David Wayne. Right now, 53 degrees. It is partly cloudy in Pensacola. The Santa Rosa County Board of Commissioners may look into setting up additional community redevelopment agencies in unincorporated areas. That would allow TIF funding to be used in certain areas within a zone's boundary.
I do believe that this is important for a good portion of District 5 on the unincorporated area. I think you have a lot of residents that that are very envious of what the city of Gulf Breeze has and the things they've been able to do and want to have some similar input on what their community looks like.
That is Commissioner Colton Wright, District 5. He says a CRA would benefit his district and potentially other unincorporated areas of the county as well. According to Florida law, certain areas can be designated as CRAs under certain conditions, including higher crime rates than surrounding areas, inadequate infrastructure, or insufficient roadways. It's expected to be discussed at Thursday's regular board meeting. Pensacola Fire Department has its next smoke alarm Saturday set up for this week. And, well, you probably already guessed, it's going to be on Saturday in the East Side neighborhood. They'll have teams of firefighters in the area east of Hayes, west of 7th, north of Cervantes, and south of Brainerd. They'll be going door-to-door between 9 and noon, offering to install smoke detectors free of charge. It is 10:33. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 forecast.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson with your first warning weather update. We are going to be seeing a nice, beautiful day today, starting off on the cooler side, warming up in the afternoon near 69 degrees. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 56. For Wednesday, we will have a chance of some isolated showers, high near 72. Wednesday night, temperatures dropping near 63. Looking beautiful for Thursday with highs in the mid-70s. Stay connected to the Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
53 and partly cloudy right now. Your next news at 11. Breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne, News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Tyson Foods is closing its pork plant in Perry, Iowa that has 1,200 workers, eliminating the largest employer in its town. It comes after the company closed several other plants last year and consolidated its corporate operations the year before. Tyson Foods says it will work with state and local officials to help those being let go and will encourage workers to apply for openings at its other plants. The Department of Agriculture has announced new requirements for meat and egg producers who use the Made in the USA labels on their products. Under the new rule, labels can only be used for products derived from animals that are born, raised, slaughtered, and processed in the U.S. The new bill goes into effect January 1st of 2026, but the government encouraged.
Every year, Steve Faircal climbs the stairs of the John Hancock Center in Chicago, 94 floors to the top.
It's called the hustle up the Hancock.
It's hard to believe when you watch Steve today that a few years ago, his lungs were failing and he was fighting to survive.
For 8 hours a day, someone was pounding on my chest to try and keep my lungs clear.
I honestly don't think I had more than a couple weeks to live.
That's when Steve received the gift of life, a double lung transplant made possible by an organ donor.
After I got my new lungs, I started doing things that I had never been able to do. I never knew that breathing could feel this good.
Steve climbs to honor his donor and to raise awareness for organ, eye, and tissue donation.
Wouldn't you like that when you left this beautiful planet, that you could save a few lives on your way out? It's an incredible gift.
Imagine what you could make possible by leaving behind the gift of life. Learn more and sign up as an organ, eye, and tissue donor. Go to organdonor.gov. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Health Resources and Services Administration.
Hey, Pensacola, get ready for a midday delight that'll have you hooked. Weekdays from 11 until 2 on News Radio Pensacola. Tune in to the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show. Jamie Markley, David Van Camp, and Scott Robbins are their dynamic trio that'll keep you entertained, informed, and laughing out loud during your lunch break. They dish out the hottest topics, bring you the latest news, and deliver their unique blend of humor and insight that'll have you coming back for more. It's the Markley, Van Camp, and Robbins Show on News Radio Pensacola. 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
I'm dialing in and tune the station. They talk about the U.S. inflation. I understand just a little.
No comprende, it's a riddle.
I'm on a Mexican radio.
You're actually on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable, Wall of Voodoo, Mexican radio. I was not very familiar with this song before you came in and said that this you wanted this as our bumper music, but it's really catchy. I love that. My guest this morning, Wesley Odom from Armada Advisors. Check out their new location, 1800 North East Street here in Pensacola, across from the old Baptist Hospital location. You can check them out online, armadaadvisors.com, or just give them a call, 850-497-6167. If you have questions about your financial future, your investments, your savings, debt, all of that, let us know, 437-1620, and we'll get your questions answered here on the air. Getting back to the personal approach that we were talking about earlier, how does a person know if he or she is on track to retire comfortably?
It goes back to their expenses, you know. When they do a calculation, and they say, "Okay, I want to retire when I'm 62, 65, whatever the case may be." Some people I hear say, "Well, I'm never going to retire. I can't afford it." Oh, right. Come on, really? I mean, at some point, your body's going to say, "I quit."
Right.
You know, I mean, and well, I'm always going to work. I do nothing if I were, you know, come on. I've heard it all. We've all heard it all. But at some point, you know that people don't work efficiently as when they're older, when they're younger. I mean, it just happens. I mean, yeah. And you just need to face the music. And at certain times in your life, you don't want to do certain things. You used to like mowing the grass when you were younger. I don't mind doing that. Yeah, I used to do it when I was a kid and all that. At some point, you say, you know what? I'm tired of doing the grass. I don't do it anymore.
Right.
So I think that what you have to do is you have to say, okay, when do I want to retire? What are my expenses now? If I'm going to have the house paid off by then, okay, well, then I can deduct that expense. That won't be the case. I do want to have some time for some travel or whatever, like camping, whatever you want to do, put that money in there because, you know, you have to factor that in. But you have to do these calculations. And I know that we've done that numerous times for different people. And Fidelity is really big on it. That's who we use as primarily our custodian. And so people are like dealing with a local person who can deal with Fidelity. And that's why they'll call us. That's why we get a lot of business that way. We say, hey, I love Fidelity. I know you're a local guy. Let's go ahead and do it. And, you know, because they're the best institution out around there in that category. Mm-hmm. So anyway, what we'll do is we want to make sure that people are on a green line. And we'll say, okay, well, you're on the green line right now. And let's make sure we stay on that green line so you can get to that retirement point you want to be. Mm-hmm. And so that's what you have to do. You have to factor out expenses, income, savings rates, what kind of return we have to get, what minimum return do we have to get? Do we have to be real aggressive with your portfolio? Or can we be moderate? Can we be real conservative? One lady came in one time and she says, I'm kind of conservative. Can I still be conservative? And I did the calculation. I said, yeah, you're good to go.
Mm. With the buzzword this year and last year, inflation. Let's talk about that. How does that affect how we are planning our retirement? Well, how do we have to adjust for that?
It definitely plays a factor. That's because that's the reason that the Federal Reserve is so particular right now about keeping interest rates as high as they are and have indicated they're going to keep it longer because they want to make sure that inflation rate comes down to a manageable level. Inflation is always in our economy. You know, we've got it baked in the sauce, so to speak. But the Federal Reserve wants to keep inflation around 2%. That's higher than that, much higher than that right now. And that's why you get concerned. So you have to factor in. I usually use an inflation rate when I do these calculations about, is it possible for Mr. and Mrs. Jones, for example, to retire in 2035? I'll use a 3%, a worst case scenario. I also will run the scenario a little differently, saying, okay, what's worst case scenario? What's best case? So I'll run a worst case scenario, inflation really bad and a market's really bad. And I'll also run an average scenario. If things are average returns, average inflation rate. And then I'll also, and fortunately our clients have been above average. And so, you know, we've been able to beat those two extremes. But I always like to run the two worst case scenarios because you don't want to go there. You don't want to have that person at 65 show up and say, you know what? I'm going to have to work 3 more years because it just didn't work out.
Right. Yeah, and not all the jobs are going to be like the greeters at Walmart. You know, those jobs might, disappear. You can't just sit and greet people. Right. You know, you're going to have to maybe do hard labor, and you can't do that when you're 65, 68 years old.
You don't want to be in Chattahoochee, and you don't want to be in the federal pen, doing hard labor that way either.
Exactly. A lot of people, they kind of rely on their Social Security plan. They think, well, I've been paying in since I was a kid. I've got Social Security. What are some strategies to maximize that? Because I know for me, it's not going to be a whole lot coming in on Social Security. So how can people maximize that?
Well, you got to remember how Social Security is calculated. I mean, they take the 35... I think it is largest month over month or a largest 35. I look at 35 years worth of income, basically. And they can say, what's your average monthly income? What has been the highs and the lows during that time period? And they only accept income up to, I think, almost 148,000, roughly, something like that. It's like 147.9. So if you make more than that, they're like, okay, that's nice, but for calculation purposes, we're only going to count up to that 148 roughly, okay? Mm-hmm. And then they're going to, when they do the computation, they're going to take into account, what you earned, like the first $1,200 you learned at least on that basis over every month or something. So if you earned at least $1,200 a month or something like that, that's what they're going to, that's going to factor more in than that 140 something thousand. Mm. So, there's these three tiers and it's a computation. You can go into the details of the Social Security Administration. So the bottom line is if you think, I'm just going to work a few years and that's it. No. They're going to work 30, they can look at 35 years. Wow. And that's why it's important to get your quarters in, get your quarters recorded. I know a lot of people are like, oh, I don't like paying that Social Security and everything. Really? Well, you're really going to like it when you don't get any.
Right.
You know, when you're thinking, where am I my Social Security? Well, all those jobs you did underneath the table and you never got paid for it because you're a waiter somewhere or whatever. Right. Mm-hmm. You just name it,
Yep.
And now you're asking for the handout? Come on.
Right.
The government's saying, well, look at your wages. And you can go on SocialSecurity.com, put in your Social Security number, put your birth date in and figure out, okay, do you have the recorded numbers for me, that I work for X, Y, and Z companies, whatever, and earned X. And you can look it up and see if they have got it. If they don't have it, then you need to contact Social Security and say, hey, or go back to your employer and say, why didn't you report this,
right.
Whatever. If you just been flying underneath the radar smiling all the way to how much money you've made, quote, unquote, by not paying taxes, it'll always come back to you. I'll guarantee you. Mm.
My guest this morning, Wesley Odom from Armada Advisors. Go online to armadaadvisors.com. They have a new location right here in Pensacola, 1800 North E Street, across from the Old Baptist Hospital. You can just give them a call on the phone, 497-6167. I want to bring up a scenario. Say somebody gets to retirement, them and their spouse, they're living off of their retirement. They've got a little bit of Social Security coming in as well. Maybe one of them passes away, or maybe we get into a situation where we need long-term care. Let's talk about that, because I always worry about when I get to retirement, say I've done well and I've got enough coming in just to cover my expenses and to live pretty comfortably, but then I need long-term care for something.
Well, if you look into long-term care, you need to be specific and really look at what the coverage issue is. because it's always in the details. The devil's in the details. Mm-hmm. And it's easy to buy a, quote, long-term care policy. Oh, I want to buy a long-term care policy. Okay, well, what does it cover? What's the exclusion period? Mm-hmm. How long do you have to be, you know, at what point do they start paying you? How many days? What's the maximum benefit? Does it adjust with inflation? I mean, there's a lot of different things you need to be concerned about, because I've seen some situations occur where people buy the, quote, long-term care, and they realize, you know what, that wasn't exactly what I thought it was.
Right.
You know, so I always, the only times I really encourage people to get a long-term care policy is if they're single, they have no kids, you know, that kind of situation. Mm-hmm. If they're married and they have a lot of children, and they're having good relationships with the children, to me, their long-term care policy is baked into those kids.
Right.
Okay. I mean, hey, mom spent a lot of time wiping butts, mm-hmm. you know, and taking care of kids and taking the T-ball games or whatever. And then, you know what? There's a time in which mom needs to be taken care of too.
Right.
And people might, I'm busy, mom. Well, you know what? Yeah. She was busy too when she was taking you up, mm-hmm. you know, and taking care of you.
Right.
It's time for you to get back to mom. And so we all owe it to that generation and our parents. It says in the Bible, honor thy father and mother. You know, that's honoring them for the time they did to take care of you. So I think that's to me, it's the ultimate take care strategy. And I think that people ought to be mindful when they move in their own retirement home, you know, like, okay, well, where's my mom living? Mm. Who's going to take care of mom? If worst case scenario happens, could she live in this house? I mean, I know your wife might say, oh, God, I don't want your mom living in this house. You know, I've heard it all.
Right.
But you got to think about what the situations could be and what could I do for mom. So I think that economically the odds are that people don't need long-term care necessarily. And you got to remember, too, there's a certain amount of care that when you get into a Medicare situation, when you have so many days it's covered by the hospital, and then after that they have so many days in the rehab facility, and after those days are used up, it's magic. All of a sudden, they say, "You know, Mrs. Jones, you can go home now." Like, wait a minute, yeah, but you extended your days. In other words, they will keep you there and make sure you are just perfect mm-hmm. until that magic days are over, and then it's time for you to go be picked up,
yep.
and then you're somebody else's problem.
And you're on
your
own.
Anyway, so I think children are the best way of long term care. That's just me.
Right. Well, speaking of families and all of that, does somebody need to set up a trust or an estate plan?
I think that it's very important. Yes, I think that's especially if you own. It depends on the situational. Obviously, everything is situational. But to me, you need to think about estate planning if you own properties, especially out of state properties. Mm-hmm. That would be really important because you don't want to have to go through probate on. Let's say if you own North Carolina property and Florida property, maybe Louisiana property or that farm in Mississippi or whatever, you know, that's getting complicated. You know, put it all in a trust, make it simple, and also make it simple for your kids. I mean, that would be huge. So, yes, I'm a real big believer in that. And, we work with some really fantastic estate planners here in town, and we've served as trustee. I've served as trustee before. For certain people to help people out, and when they pass away, we kind of take care of that. But anyway, yeah, it's incredibly important to do that and think about it because, you know, we're not going to be here forever. We're only here for a certain period of time on the stage, and we've got to figure out what we're going to do and how we're going to pass things on. You know, what do we want? Where do we want that money? How do we want it spent?
It's astounding to me, and I don't know the exact numbers, but how many people don't have an actual written will when they're reaching retirement age? And a lot of people almost are, I think they're afraid of it, right? Like they're afraid if I do a will, then I'm basically, you know, preparing for death.
Right. I know I've heard that before. And also you got to think about in some situations, if you don't have any real property, let's say you rent your own house or something, mm-hmm. you rent a condo and you only have your personal property and your car, then you don't have any heirs except that distant cousin. I mean, you could get by with no will. You could say, I want to do everything on my bank accounts and brokerage accounts to beneficiaries. You know, that's possible. There's ways around it. But I think if you're married and you have a wife and a kid and you need to have some plans set aside, What's going to happen in that situation? And you need to think about, you know, if you're young enough, I hate to say it, but do you want your wife in a situation if you're the primary bread earner and you die? What are you going to do? Is she going to put her in a bad situation? She had this kid, young kid, and there's no money, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So you got to think about, do I need term life insurance? I mean, right. There's a lot of things you look at financial planning. That's what we try to help people with, to try to figure out, okay, just think about these strategies. And we don't sell life insurance at all. We just are, again, advisors about this.
Right, right. And you mentioned term life, and I know the other one is it whole life
insurance? Whole life or universal life, right. Yeah.
Yeah. So you recommend term as well.
I think it's just the cheapest.
Yeah.
It's just the cheapest. And you know, if you have a young family, you don't want to strap them with something that's going to be whatever. You know, you got to think about, you know, most people want to live for today. They don't want to live for death.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. If you have questions today, let us know, 437-1620. My guest this morning, Wesley Odom from Armada Advisors. Go online to armadaadvisors.com. They're located here in Pensacola at 1800 North E Street, or you could just give them a phone call at 850-497-6167. Let's talk real quick about Fidelity. You guys use Fidelity. You mention them a lot. Well, what are the advantages of going with Fidelity? Why do you like them so much?
Well, we love them because they're the largest record keeper in the world. I mean, they hold a huge amount of assets. They have really great financial tools. For us, we can have access to institutional pricing. So what that means is we pass those savings on to our clients. So if, for example, if you went directly to Fidelity and call the 1-800 number, that's great. They're good people up there and they would help you. But you're going to pay more than you would if you went through us, so to speak. You know, there's, you know, if you saw a bond, for example, that was selling for 6%, you might see it selling for 6.5% on my system, you know? So, anyway, it's in that regard, you're getting, you know, you there's a savings there. And same thing, institutional pricing, you know, mutual funds, we buy mutual funds. You normally have to have $1 million to buy, you know, and you might buy a mutual fund with $1,000, but it's a $1 million normal mutual fund. So that saves people money. And, you know, because their expenses are lower internally than it would be if they bought the regular A share class, whatever it is, or T share class, whatever, you just name it. So anyway, we pass the savings on because we don't get any fees underneath the table. We're only getting those asset advisory fees that we charge.
All right. So is there ever a time besides retirement when people should think about withdrawing funds from their retirement accounts? What are the rules with that? What are a person's options?
Well, you know, every year they've changed recently regarding IRAs, and now it used to be 70.5 when you had to start taking money out of your IRA, for example. Now it's up to 73. So that's changed, allows a little bit more time horizon for tax deferral. But you need to figure out, and this is really getting into where you're working with a tax advisor too, because we are not tax advisors. You know, you try to want to balance out generally so you're not throwing yourself in a higher income bracket. So, for example, if you know how much you're getting from your, let's say, your CDs and your bond interest and your dividend stock portfolios that's not in an IRA and not in a Roth IRA, you know what that is. And we give you that information, but you know what your income, let's say, from pensions or Social Security is, okay? And then you got to figure out, okay, well, I've got to take this money out of an IRA. I don't want to throw myself in a huge bracket. What bracket do I need to keep under to be able to do that? And sometimes you might want to utilize a Roth IRA to kind of balance it out if you needed to get some extra cash out rather than taking that money from the IRA. But so that's why, you know, it does say, I'm quoting the Bible a lot today, but, you know, in Proverbs it says, with one advisor, plans fail. With many advisors, plans succeed. And that's so true about finances and whatnot. You need to have a good accountant. You need to have a good financial guy. You need to have a good attorney who can give you some good advice that way. You have a good partner, too, because, you know, I've heard of this so many times. It's so true. You know, the wrong partner can throw out more with a spoon than the person can bring in with a shovel. You know,
that's a good man. This is words of wisdom today. Really, really good stuff. We do have a text from a listener. I'm 71 years old, totally debt free. The only income is $36,000 from Social Security. They have about $163,000 in checking. Should they buy a $100,000? I guess this is, I don't know what they're talking about purchasing with an 8% rate annuity. So annuity, 8%, to generate income and use $50,000 for another annuity for payment or for long-term care insurance. Does that make sense? Did I read that right? Yeah.
Okay. A lot of questions, a lot of issues there. I would say if you're getting, if there's an 8% annuity, I would ask if it's actually a fixed annuity. That would be the first thing. You know, a fixed annuity is kind of like what you and I would interpret an annuity would be. Like, in other words, if you have $100,000, 8% of $100,000 would be 8%. So you get $8,000 in interest every year that would be taxable to you if you took it out. You know, to me, that's a real 8% annuity. There's a lot of annuities out there I would warn against that are, they say, oh, we'll give you 8%. Well, it's not really 8% like you think it was 8%. It's more like, well, if you keep it in here and we'll give it to you a death benefit. Wait a minute, I need this now.
Mm.
You with me?
Right.
So to me, I think that it's you need to figure out if it sounds like you are trying to focus on, okay, I need some income now and I need some growth. So if you need income and growth, I'd say there are some securities you could get that would give you both of that. You know, you could have a growth and income type portfolio. You could have some individual bonds that you could get. And individual bonds will pay interest, real interest of anywhere from 5% to maybe 7%, I think, right now. You might be lucky if you got a little bit more than that. But I'm trying to keep it a really, you know, a good portfolio that you're not going to have to worry and not have to worry about at night, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You sleep well at night. That's what I'm trying to say.
Right.
And I think that the other thing I would think about doing is, you know, there are some securities that pay really good dividends. I know I've mentioned on the program before, Home Depot has raised their dividend over the last 10 years by 600%. And they just raised their dividend by 8% the other day. So that's an interesting idea. And there's some strategy you might want to think about there. In terms of long-term care, if you're the only person and you're single and that's it, you might want to look into a long-term care policy.
Plan.
I would look at different details. You know, give me all the pros and cons of each one. Your agent will sit down with you and try to do that. We don't get involved. We don't, you know, sell that kind of stuff. We just kind of counsel people about looking at those details, making sure the eligibility areas are what you would want. And then also, too, think about what your longevity in your family is. I would really kind of explore that. You know, how long is your mom, dad, and mom and dad did a lot live? You know, are you in great health? Are you real active? You know, there are some retirement homes out there that actually have a long-term care provision. Like, for example, Azalea Trace. You know, if you go into Azalea Trace, you basically buy into the program. I mean, if something happens to you, they kind of take care of you from a long-term care standpoint.
Right.
So those are all different things you could think about. And again, it's just a matter of sitting it down and feeling comfortable with that person. But I'm not really in favor of the 8% annuity unless it's a fixed annuity. And I don't think you can find 8% fixed annuity right now.
Mm. So if I'm reading this question on the end there, if I'm understanding this correctly, they were thinking about taking a huge chunk, you know, 50 grand and using that annuity for payment for long-term care insurance. So does that work?
I think that, you know, you could do that. There is, again, there's different ways to do it. You could say, I want to do a long-term care policy that's all paid up. Like if you went to a retirement home, that would be one way to do it, or assisted living facility really is more likely, and you know that would have a long term component. You could maybe bake that in, or you could say, okay, how much can I? When you put your money in an annuity, can you really get it out? That's the thing, you know.
Yeah.
When you put your money into a bond, you know that bond is going to mature, like the CD matures,
right?
And so you can get that money out, and so the interest and that can pay for that long term care policy is there, but you get the access back anytime. So that's what I would be concerned about too. It's always about getting back your money because you don't know what's going to happen.
Right. Thank you for that text, listener. And you mentioned earlier, you know, taxes. You might get taxed on that 8%. So you have to think about that. It's not a true 8%. How can somebody minimize their tax liability? How can somebody avoid some of those taxes later in life?
Well, I mean, obviously, if you're in a high tax bracket, they're tax-free municipal bonds. But, you know, again, if you could find a fixed annuity, notice a fixed annuity is different from a variable annuity or some other type of structured annuity. A fixed annuity is like a CD in the sense that it's not guaranteed by the bank, but it's guaranteed or by that insurance company, and it pays a straight 8%. So that 8% in this environment is very, very good.
Yeah. But you said it's kind of rare, though, right?
On a fixed annuity, it would be very rare.
Okay.
Very rare right now.
All right. Lots of great information. Let us know if you have any questions. Call them 497-6167, armadaadvisors.com. Wesley, thank you so much for being here today.
You're listening to News Radio 92.3, WNRP, Gulf Breeze, Milton, Pensacola.